So if I look at the landscape, which says the global market for websites, you know, it's a huge number, right? But if you start narrowly bringing it down to, you know, headless CMS, which is the category that we sit into, which is a rather technical term, and then we're going into that category with a more defined, clearer positioning around B2B SaaS technology. So we're actually trying to carve out a much smaller market to go after, but going after it in confidence that we've got a tighter fit in terms of the feature set for the requirements of that audience.
Hello and welcome to the Digital Irish Podcast, a podcast all about celebrating Irish innovation and Irish innovators globally. I'm your host, Dave Byrne. Welcome back to the podcast. Very excited to share this episode with you as we speak with Alan Gleeson, who is the founder of Contento, which you can find details on at contento.io. Contento is basically an organization that is helping B2B SaaS companies build websites. It is a content platform built exclusively for these B2B SaaS companies. So it's a really interesting area I found, because obviously website building is such a competitive space. I mean, we mentioned WordPress and various others throughout this interview. So I really wanted to deep dive into why Alan felt like that this was an industry that he wanted to jump into, and how he felt about building an organization in such a competitive environment. The other thing that we talk about in this interview, and the thing that I really appreciate Alan for, is that he's very supportive of the wider Irish community. He's been involved in multiple organizations, and he is also now leaning into the Digital Irish Group in London. So we talk a little bit about what he believes are unique elements of Irish culture that help make it such a collaborative and supportive environment for each other, and also just hear about what his hopes and aspirations for growing the community in London are. So really, I hope you enjoy this episode. I'm just going to drop you straight in it. Alan, thank you so much for taking out the time to join us on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me on, Dave.
Alan, this isn't your first experience as a founder, and you are also exceptionally supportive of other founders and entrepreneurs. Where do you think this entrepreneurial spirit came from?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's an interesting one, Dave. Going back in the annals of time, I actually started my career in banking. I don't know if you remember, did you ever come across a company called FreeServe, Dave?
FreeServe, that does ring a bell, yeah.
Yeah, so FreeServe was the largest ISP, which was how you got on the internet, Dave, back in the days of 56K dial-up. So they did a joint venture with Barclays, and I was working in Barclays at the time, and they created this new entity, which was part of FreeServe, and a number of us joined. We left Barclays, we left the kind of banking world and went across to join FreeServe. So that was essentially a tech startup, I guess, you know, back in, around 2000. So since then, I kind of left the world of banking behind and have worked with a whole host of different startups, largely in what you'd call the B2B SaaS space. So it's sort of very much software as a service space, Dave. And a lot of those, you know, I was head of marketing, VC-backed companies, really great, but interesting places to be the head of marketing, right? The average tenure, I don't know, could you guess, but it's less than 2 years. So, you know, it's an interesting role to be in, very demanding, and lots of risk and uncertainty. But I guess I learned a lot on the journey, Dave, and then I ended up doing my own thing, setting up a consultancy before last year, setting up Contento as my own tech startup.
It's really interesting to hear how the entrepreneurial spirit was fostered in you. One thing I also want to touch on as well is that I saw that you have marketing experience in your background. How do you think that this marketing experience has helped you as an entrepreneur?
I'd be a little bit controversial on this, Dave, I think, so it's interesting. I did study marketing in university, I did economics and marketing for my primary degree, and then a master's in strategic marketing. But that was the late 90s, Dave, right? And I kind of alluded to earlier, it was a very different world, right? So in some ways, a lot of what we learned back then became quickly very much redundant, right? It was marketing for a different era, a very heavily kind of consumer-orientated marketing, right? And of course, you know, very, very different to the world of digital marketing and B2B marketing and software marketing, which is the world that I kind of occupy now. So I think I took some lessons clearly, but, you know, a lot of it was redundant because of the changing circumstances. But you do take certain elements that help inform how you run companies, right? So, you know, competition was a big thing back then. And, you know, there was an academic by the name of Michael Porter who was writing about competition at the time and competitive strategies and how to have a competitive advantage and these sort of things. So, you know, things like positioning and investing in brand and standing out in a competitive market, you know, were some of the elements, Dave, that I would have picked up from the academic stuff back then that now I can carry through into the kind of modern day approach to, you know, having a very strong marketing presence for those companies that I tend to work with.
Fascinating. And now coming to Contento itself, what was the inspiration behind Contento?
I guess I've always been working in the kind of startup world, as I mentioned, particularly for the last 10 or 15 years. So often working with, you know, great founders that have raised finance and we're building different applications. And, you know, there was a period, Dave, when I was sort of waiting for my big idea, right? And you kind of learn that the big idea doesn't often, you know, magically appear as this big light bulb moment, right? But I was always kind of keen and interested in doing a startup. And then, of course, there's other factors at play. I certainly love my work as a consultant and sort of, you know, you've other issues, you know, family, you know, so there's always this balance right around, you know, your choice of work, I guess. But the timing was right. I, you know, one of my co-founders, you know, we met for a coffee a couple of years ago now, and we were sort of musing on the next cutting edge technologies. And, you know, he introduced me to this concept of headless CMS, which I'll come on to in a minute, Dave. But, you know, it piqued my interest because, you know, it related to a content management system. And a content management system is, which, you know, it's what powers every website in the world. So, you know, I could see that, you know, there was an interesting opportunity in that space. And he was willing to, you know, start up. So we had three co-founders. So I guess that was the journey that led to me starting Contento.
I love hearing stories about how startups came about. And that was really fascinating. Thank you, Alan. But I do have to ask, though, because Contento is playing in a space which is highly competitive. Just thinking about WordPress, like WordPress feels so ubiquitous. When you were thinking about starting Contento and when you were getting up and running, did that level of competition feel daunting at any point?
Yeah, look, it's a really great question. Hopefully one that your listeners will be interested in, because I guess what I realized, there's a few points with Dave. What I realized from some of my clients were some of them were very successful in crowded markets with their own applications that were fairly modest. So one, for example, was an expense management application. There was a number of other expense management applications, but they carved out a nice viable business from it. So there was one piece around that. The second piece is I could see that pretty much most of the clients I'd worked with were in competitive markets, right? The barriers to entry for software is much lower than it once was. And also there's a lot of funding being attracted into it. So, you know, a lot of the work I was doing as a consultant was sort of related to this very concept of, you know, how to be a winner or effective in a competitive environment. And then I guess, you know, there is a pocket, Dave, that will always exist, which will be, very rare, obscure technology evolutions that do emerge and are kind of in a wide open space that really lack serious competition. And I mean, they're very, very rare, and there tends to be issues with those as well, Dave. You could be too early. You may not raise enough finance to educate the market. Your timing could be off. So no matter what route you kind of plot, there are challenges, which is part of the attraction of being an entrepreneur, right? So, and I guess for me, then the final part, Dave, was, WordPress is a 20-year-old company. And, as the internet has matured, you now have an opportunity to do what I would call vertical software or vertical SaaS applications. And by that, I mean, you can kind of pick a niche or niches, as you'd say in the US, whereby you're building something for a specific audience. Now, you couldn't really do that 10 or 15 years ago because the market would be too small, but you're beginning to see things like accountancy software for particular audiences. There's recently been a CRM or customer relationship management tool built and brought out for B2B SaaS companies exclusively. And that was our philosophy was, Contento is not for your average startup that's a restaurant or a pub or a chemist or a hairdresser that needs a basic site. That's not our space. That's, WordPress can kind of play there nicely. But there are technology companies like the ones that I were working in that had sort of unique requirements, but also were leaving the likes of WordPress in their droves because they found that the tool wasn't scalable and it wasn't suited to their more sophisticated needs, for want of a better word, Dave. So these were some of the ingredients that were kind of at play, when we were sort of looking at the market.
So there's so many different things I want to touch on from what you just said there. One in particular is thinking about the fact that WordPress is 20 years old. So for you coming in, where you have legacy businesses like that who may not have innovated on what they're offering in the last 10, 15, 20 years, how are you then thinking about innovation for Contento? Because I imagine that there are so many different avenues you could go down. How do you define what you should be focused in on, and how do you prioritize at the moment?
Yeah, most definitely, Dave, right? So, one of the things that WordPress has done quite well is it's relied very heavily on plugins to kind of extend the functionality. But the plugins come with a cost, right, Dave? They tend to be, third-party plugins and can be introducing security vulnerabilities. So WordPress, when I look at innovation, it's almost a case, Dave, of doing less rather than doing more. And, part of the challenge is some of the other tools in the space are just getting so complicated and sort of so complex that they're becoming unwieldy. So part of it is to be, there's a methodology that I use quite a lot called Jobs to be Done by a guy called Clayton Christensen. And I think it's just being really clear on the jobs that the user needs to do, the pains that they have with their existing solutions, and then kind of addressing those. So you're right. One of the challenges is you need what's called a table stakes set of features. So your content management system has to deliver everything you'd expect a content management system to do. But after that, then you have to be very, very selective around, where you go with features, because otherwise you get into what's called feature bloat, where the software becomes unusable. And I guess this is where we're trying to differentiate, Dave, is we're making assumptions and saying Contento is about building websites for B2B SaaS and technology companies. And by pigeonholing ourselves in a smaller box, we can then ensure that the features we put in are tightly aligned with that cohort or that niche, and we're not really thinking about the requirements of the mass market. So that's the kind of approach, Dave, and only time will tell if it's the right approach. I'm pretty confident it is. These are some of the things you've got to evaluate on the journey.
I think that's such a valuable lesson for any aspiring entrepreneurs, where you could potentially have so many different avenues that you could take your business down, but you may find yourself overly stretched. And instead, just really honing in and focusing on one key differentiator that you can truly innovate in on and truly grow in.
Yeah, and again, kind of going back to an earlier question, Dave, when you asked me kind of lessons from sort of earlier years, right? So there's also economics lessons that are still relevant, right? So, you know, how you define the market is another way that you can position things. So if I look at the landscape, which says the global market for websites, you know, it's a huge number, right? But if you start narrowly bringing it down to, you know, headless CMS, which is the category that we sit into, which is a rather technical term, and I won't go into it because it's probably too technical for your audience, but that's a category that sort of sits below the umbrella category. And then we're going into that category with a more defined, clearer positioning around B2B SaaS technology. So we're actually, you know, trying to carve out a much smaller market to go after, but going after it in confidence that we've got a tighter fit in terms of the feature set for the requirements of that audience. And I guess that's the trade-off that you're trying to, approach it through that lens.
And right now, you as a founder, you're very passionate about this. But as you're continuing to grow, you're obviously trying to onboard a team and build a culture. How do you maintain that enthusiasm and drive to take on the competition and to grow in a competitive space and as you build your team and grow your culture?
Again, it's an interesting topic, right? So one of the things, Dave, is we're a remote company, which again, is a diversion from the old school model and going back to kind of the way things were run. So we're remote, right? We're spread across a number of different countries, which creates challenges. But also, you know, we're at the stage in our world where we're not really thinking about WordPress. We're not really thinking about the others. We're thinking about, can we build a phenomenally great product that's beautifully designed and, you know, is built with the needs of our target audience in mind. So, you know, it's probably me is the only one that's using WordPress as a reference because I can use it for marketing or I can kind of pick on it and say, look, it's too old. And I know people will agree with me. Some won't because, of course, you know, there's a huge WordPress ecosystem that's, you know, very much defenders of the status quo. So, you know, to answer your question directly, the product team aren't worried about it or aren't thinking about it. You know, at this stage of our evolution, it's mostly product and developers, and they just want to build a great content management system.
So it sounds like that rather than keeping an eye on the competition, you're encouraging this culture of focusing on the product and creating a great service and a great content management system. Is this a kind of another golden nugget that, you know, you would share with aspiring entrepreneurs that they should focus on the product first or the service first rather than the competition?
Yeah, I think, look, you have to know the market, right? And we've only talked about WordPress. There's lots of other content management systems that I would be familiar with, you know, Webflow being one, Wix or Squarespace. And then within the headless category, there's Storyblock, there's Sanity, there's Prismic. So all these names that your average listener won't have heard of. So I'll be kind of aware of having used a number of those over the years. You know, what are the kind of key features of most of them and where they're weak and where they're strong. And then there's more transparency in the market, Dave, because, you know, you can look at review sites. Again, in technology, you can look at G2 or Capterra and see people leaving reviews about what's good and bad about these different applications. So, and of course, you can visit their websites and you can see their pricing strategies and you can pick up from things like Reddit forums, you know, where people are having issues and pain with them. So it's not that we're completely ignoring the wider competitive set, but we kind of did it for a while as part of the journey in terms of due diligence on the market and researching it. And sort of once you kind of do that, Dave, I think it's a case of off you go then and kind of pick your strategy and build, But you've got to be, you know, flexible, right? And you've got to be willing to kind of tweak things based on, you know, feedback from users. So I think it's a balance, but, you know, part of it is, you know, the market, depending on how you define it, like if we define the market as just headless CMSs, right? You know, WordPress doesn't really play in that little category. So then you're probably comparing yourself against some of the other providers in that space. So it's a bit nuanced.
I really love the thoughtful approach there, Alan, that you're taking to this. And, you know, it sounds like that you've got so many insights based off of your experience being an entrepreneur. Are there other snippets or other nuggets of advice that you would give to any aspiring entrepreneurs that may be listening to this podcast?
Yeah, there's two things, Dave, I guess. So one thing is things take longer than you've always, you know, planned or hoped, right? And it's a classic case of where the revenue takes longer to come in and the costs kind of come forward. So you're kind of in this weird bind where, it's a double whammy almost, where your product might take longer to launch, which means you're further off from getting your revenue. But the flip side is your costs are almost accelerating in the short term. So there's definitely a kind of a, you know, when you do your original full calculations on kind of, you know, how much to raise and sort of runway and these sort of things, I think you definitely need to go back through it a second time and even go more conservative or more pessimistic, however you want to view it. So that's one thing. I guess the second thing is you've got to be very comfortable with the uncertainty, right? And that seems like an obvious thing to say, but you know, through your career, if you're working in a salaried job, you know, there's a lot of sort of predictability and there's sort of, you know, you're in a known environment, a known context where, you know, usually the function that you're in, there's a playbook or there's a recipe or you've got experience in it. And whereas, of course, you know, in a very rational world, if you try to rationalize startups, they're profoundly uncertain, they're profoundly risky. There's challenges at every step, and you just got to almost be willing to kind of accept and take that as part of the journey, because they are so kind of wildly unpredictable, right? So again, that's just something that probably is worth just bearing in mind, which brings in, you know, qualities like resilience, because I think there are undoubtedly, you know, lots more setbacks because the journey is uncharted, it's unknown, even for second or third time founders, right? So it's kind of a very unusual context when you're used to working in, let's say, a corporate life or as a consultant or whatever. But, you know, part of it is to view these challenges, Dave, as intellectual challenges rather than stress-inducing moments. And of course, I'm being a bit flippant there, because if you're running out of cash, that's going to induce stress, right? But by and large, treating the setbacks as kind of challenges, I think is a way that you can approach it with without going through a really difficult emotional roller coaster.
A quick pause in today's podcast. Are you interested in getting involved in the Digital Irish community? We are looking for people to join us at events, join on the podcast, and also help with J1s who are now coming over this summer to the US. If you are interested in joining this community, even just connecting with others, check out digitalirish.com. or email hello@digitalirish.com. Now back to the interview. I want to change gears a little bit here, because I want to go back to something else that you mentioned earlier, that you're building a remote business and, you know, you've got team members working remotely. And I wanted to ask you about this because you yourself are based in London, right?
Right, yes.
So you've been building Contento with you based in London, but you've managed to maintain some very strong Irish connections. Would you give us a quick overview of what those connections are and how you've maintained that strong connection to Ireland.
Yeah, so I guess I'm in London pretty much 25 years, Dave. And again, I know you're based in DC, so London, obviously, geography-wise, is much closer. But yeah, when I first came over here, I think I met a lot of people initially in Trafalgar Square on All-Ireland Football Day when Cork were playing back then, Dave. They were likely to reach an All-Ireland unlike today, but... You know, I ended up playing for a soccer team in London initially that would have been college mates from University College Cork. So, you know, early on, I sort of had a bit of a tribe because obviously coming to a big city, I didn't know anybody having moved to London, having not been here before. So I sort of gravitated to some people I knew and then created, you know, joined the soccer team, which went for 10 or 12 years almost, which was a great... source of kind of camaraderie and sort of kept you with close connections. And then I sort of got involved with a number of business networks, you know, over the years. Again, there's a very active Irish diaspora in London. And again, they were all sort of not-for-profits, very much designed to sort of support people that had recently moved across and sort of I now live in West London, which is a hotbed of an Irish diaspora. And like tonight, I think I'm taking my kids to Gaelic football. So they're going playing tonight. So I do find it valuable. Of course, it's not exclusive. I'm not sort of, you know, I'm not obsessed with kind of maintaining Irish roots and connections. But, you know, I think it's been a very useful thing. And a lot of it is giving back, right? I've had a fortunate career. And I'm always happy to kind of mentor or support those that are, you know, beginning their journey and, you know, are probably facing challenges that I can hopefully help with.
I love that. And I really wonder if there's something unique about Irish culture that Irish people can just connect wherever they are. I mean, I live in DC now. When I moved here, didn't really know many people, but straight away there are Irish networks, there are Irish communities that are more than open to anybody participating. I wonder if this is something truly unique where no matter where you are, no matter how alone you may be, you will always feel welcome if there's Irish people there.
It's true. You know, I spent 4 or 5 months living in Montreal back in 2003. And again, I ended up playing for a local Gaelic football team. So, and Montreal is, you know, it's French speaking, right? So the office I was in was a French speaking office. And it hadn't been a kind of a major venue for the Irish diaspora. You know, there wasn't that big a community there, again, because it was French speaking and Quebec is very French, right? So of all the Canadian cities, it probably is the weakest cohort of Irish. Now, that may have changed since, right? But, you know, I think we are well placed in the Irish pub and the GAA and sort of the kind of, yeah, you know, even at the time, I remember Juste Pour Rire, which is a comedy festival in Canada. I think Tommy Tiernan was playing when I was there. So I think you're right. I think it is a superpower of ours, and the soft power of the Irish diaspora is one that I think is really, really important. And I think is something the government has kind of realized, and I know it's very supportive of various groups that are overseas, and I think it's the investment pays dividend, right? You know, dividends. I think the government needs to kind of keep investing in the diaspora because many people retain strong roots, and even in a business sense, it does help on commercial transactions. You'll often find there's an Irish person on the other side of a deal, right? That can help it progress.
I want to touch on something that you've just mentioned there, because obviously the government is involved, but there's obviously many different organizations around the world that are connecting Irish people. You've been involved in some before, including the Irish International Business Network, and now you're involved in Digital Irish. So I'd love to ask, like, working on Digital Irish in London, what are your aspirations to continue fostering this community and growing this community?
Yeah, I think it's as much for the younger community, which are probably much more heavily online, Dave, right? So a lot of their relationships are very different to the older people in the sense that they're on Snapchat and WhatsApp and kind of almost keeping a virtual relationship going. But, you know, you can't beat face-to-face relationships, particularly with what I would call weaker ties. So not your direct friends, but people that are in your broader ecosystem. So, you know, in the early years when I was working with an American subsidiary, you know, I might have needed a graphic designer or a lawyer or an accountant, and you're faced with sort of a whole sea of different options. But if someone was in your network, you know, you could almost fast track the decision. So the aspirations are that it continues, because I think there's, you know, the beauty of these networks that I've been involved with, and Digital Irish is the same, is there's no agendas, right? It's very much just people willing to help, and you can have an interesting cohort at these events, Dave, whereby you've got some older people and some people fresh off the boat, and sort of you've got clear, distinct mentor-mentee relationships. And often, you know, it's up to the younger people involved in these to just be comfortable asking, right? I mean, you know, I think it's just a case of asking for help or assistance. And, you know, I've taken loads of coffees over the years with people that were looking for advice or wanted to bounce ideas off, and sort of, you know, I think leveraging it has benefited me, but I hope I've also helped people as they've kind of looked at career opportunities or try to make decisions and didn't have someone to talk to, that you can, you know, use someone in your network, even if you're not that strongly connected to them. I mean, that's the key point. You don't have to be best buddies, but you know, you know them and trust them, and sort of that camaraderie and kind of collegiate sort of sense of, you know, having a shared background, I think is very powerful.
It's so true. And at the same time, it doesn't feel clicky at all. You know, thinking about when the All-Ireland final comes on, or when there's a big hurling match on, Irish people just seem so excited about introducing new people to hurling or Gaelic football. They almost want others to experience what they experience.
Yeah, it's not exclusive, which again I think is reflective of the new modern Ireland, right? And the kind of attractive journey we've gone on. But you referenced Digital Irish, and I think there's a drinks coming up next week in London, and you know, the wording was, you know, those of an Irish background and friends or something, you know, or friends of Ireland. So it was very open and inclusive, and it's sort of, you're not defined by your accent, right? So I think that's a key point. You can be part of the diaspora, part of the community, and it's not your accent is defining you or your place of birth. It's your sort of, because yeah, you're right, Dave, you live it. Some people that went on Erasmus to Ireland and have maintained a close interest or relationship with the place. So I think, you know, that it's a really huge sort of soft power that we can all contribute to, right? And I think that's the kind of key point. You can either be all passive on it, or you can actively embrace and encourage it. And you know, I think I'm all for the latter, right? I think, you know, for those of us that are more senior in your careers, you know, helping those on the journey that are, you know, further down the path, let's say, I think is a really great thing to do.
It's such a great point. And of course, thinking of Digital Irish, which you are now actively involved in, which is very exciting. Thinking about the younger people who may be listening here, who may not feel like that they have much to offer in the ways of mentorship or insights or messages, or that they haven't being an entrepreneur themselves, what advice would you give to them to start leaning in the community?
I think the whole point is they don't need to give anything other than themselves and come along and attend, right? So we had for example, we recently had an event in London where we had, the topic was about artificial intelligence. And we had Dr. Alan Holland from Keelvar, which is, you know, a phenomenal success story of a technology company in Ireland, along with two other panelists that are talking for an hour and a half about, you know, where artificial intelligence is going. So there's no requirement for anybody to do anything, you know, in terms of having to do anything other than just come along and watch, right, and ask questions or whatever. So I just say get involved, because I guess part of it is the kind of more senior people involved in these things are typically a lot more time pressed, right? So, you know, people can get involved with committees, they can get involved with inviting people, they can get involved with securing speakers, they can get involved with giving out badges on the door. I think, you know, it's the fact that these are non-profits and that there are no dedicated full-time resources, that it is a case of there's always something for someone to do. So just go offer, right? And just introduce yourself and sort of say you're happy to help. And I think that's the kind of, it's that first step, Dave, I think is the key one. And being comfortable and just, you know, can I help? You know, how do I help? And these are all non-for-profit, right? So there'll be something that you could definitely help with. And I think that's a great starting point.
I love that. And I love how simple you've made it, that it's just about showing up and being yourself and just being present. And honestly, that's kind of how I ended up working on Digital Irish. Like, I moved to New York and I just started attending events, and I met with like Fergal, Gavin and the others. And, you know, just hearing what other Irish people are working on and doing. And now I'm actively speaking to other Irish people about what they're doing and what they're building.
Absolutely. It's just, you know, it's the old, it reminds me, Dave, of when people used to be looking for rugby tickets for sold out internationals, and part of it was just go to the ground, right? You can wander, or you can stay at home and watch on TV. But if you go to the ground, you dramatically increase the odds of getting a ticket, right? And then maybe the next thing is to start asking, has anyone got a spare ticket? And before you know it, you're sitting in the halfway line, right? So it's the same thing, right? You can be active and making small steps that aren't huge commitments, but they can, you know, I mean, I give you one. I was at La Rochelle 4 or 5 years ago, which is a stadium that's been sold out for probably 10 years, a rugby stadium. And with my son, we decided, we found out there was a match that evening. We decided, let's go around and see if we can get a ticket, even though it's sold out. We went to the ground. And in my pidgin French, I managed to convey to a couple of stewards that we were you know, looking for tickets, and some guy overhears our poor French, and before I know it, I'm in a box on the halfway line watching La Rochelle and Stade Francais, right? So, you know, it's just being active and sort of, you know, going to Digital Irish events, and then, you know, if you like it, bringing more people or asking, can you help?
Love it. So for folks listening in London who may be interested in participating or learning more about Digital Irish, how should they connect? How should they reach out and introduce themselves? Is there anything that they could be doing?
Yeah, I mean, the easiest, Dave, is to put Digital Irish, so two words, into LinkedIn, and that will give you access to the group, which you can just join, which then means you can keep an eye on the feed to see what events are coming up. So they're probably once a quarter. So, you know, we'd love to increase the frequency, but I guess like all things, you want to start pretty small and modest and build it up over time. So that's how I would do it, Dave.
And going back to Contento, what are your plans for the next 12 to 18 months to 24 months? What does success look like for you?
Yeah, so for any CEO, right, your primary concern in your earlier years, Dave, is to not run out of cash, because when you're building an enterprise software application, you've got a lot of outgoings in the kind of initial phase before you start commercializing and hopefully getting to a cash positive month. So part of it is that basic reality of startup life, right? But the other is to, you know, really make a successful entry into the market whereby, you know, we've got a credible offering that stands up against some of the leading providers that have raised huge amounts of money, and people will view us as a very credible choice. And, you know, that's pretty much it for now, I guess. And then once you kind of take things on almost a quarterly basis when you're early in the journey. So, you know, don't look too far ahead, but just deliver a phenomenal product. And then, you know, then you've got a great shot at winning some market share.
And for those looking to understand more about Contento, what could they be reading? Where could they go to find out more?
So yes, they can find me on LinkedIn, Alan, A-L-A-N Gleeson, G-L-E-E-S-O-N, or contento.io. So contento.io, they're two great sources of information and reading materials, or just reach out to me, as I said.
Well, Alan, I just want to close out by thanking you so much for taking out the time. I know how busy you are with both Contento and Digital Irish, so really appreciate it. I wish you all the best with Contento, and I'm honestly so excited to keep working with you on Digital Irish and growing the community in London.
Thanks so much for having me on, Dave.
Thank you again to Alan for joining us for today's episode. And thank you to you, the listener. If you liked this podcast, please share it with somebody that you think might find it interesting. Please also don't forget to subscribe to the Digital Irish podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. In July, we are going to be back with a few snippets from previous guests to check in with them to see how they're getting on before we ramp back into things in August. Very excited for a string of episodes that we have coming to you in August in partnership with Enterprise Ireland. So keep an ear out for that. But otherwise, thank you again. Hope to see you back here soon.